When President Obama visited Japan last month, he was greeted by protests against America's military presence there and by a new government, which has pledged to reduce the U.S. military burden on Japan. The relationship with what is arguably our most critical Asian ally is changing, and an important step involves relocating a major Marine Corps base from Okinawa to the American island of Guam. But can that island take that kind of expansion? Producer Steve McCarthy and correspondent Mona Iskander have our report.
The island of Guam is a tropical paradise in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. There are beautiful beaches, dramatic scenery, and resort hotels. It's located more than 6,000 miles from the U.S. mainland. But what may come as a surprise to you is that Guam is American territory. Because it's on the other side of the international dateline, its popular slogan is "Where America's Day Begins." And Guam is home to two historic U.S. military bases. Now, something big is happening on this small island. The Pentagon is planning to nearly triple its presence here in what will be the largest military buildup in the Pacific since World War II.
It's like real estate. You know, location, location, location. Guam is the perfect location in the western Pacific for the United States.
John Jackson is a retired Marine colonel who is overseeing part of the military buildup on Guam. He says that Guam is vital to U.S. national security.
Guam is really of great strategic importance to the United States in the Pacific. Whether you look at it from reinforcing our alliance with Japan and the other friendly powers and nations here to deter foreign aggression, and should deterrence fail, it's a platform from which we have capabilities to go to war with.
The cost of making the move? Over $10 billion. And work has already started to bring in new personnel and advanced weapons systems. The Air Force is bringing in state-of-the-art drones. The Navy is expanding its port for aircraft carriers. The Army is bringing in a missile defense system. And more than 8,000 Marines will be relocated here from a base in Okinawa, Japan. The goal is to transform Guam into the major center of American power in the Pacific by the year 2014.
If we intend to be of influence in the Pacific, we have to be here. Presence is important. We can't have the Pacific presence from the West Coast. And Guam is U.S. territory in the Pacific.
One, two, three, four. One, two, three.
It might be a great move for the military, but not everyone who lives on the island of Guam is happy about it. There are concerns about how the buildup would affect the environment, the infrastructure, and the local culture.
I myself have pledged that I would do my darndest to prevent the military buildup.
Hope Cristobal teaches history at the main university here and is a former member of the Guam legislature. She's concerned that the island can't handle the buildup.
Just on the amount of energy needed, for example, to sustain this buildup, it's going to put so much pressure, not just on the environment, it's going to put so much pressure on the community.
Like many people here, Cristobal is of mixed heritage. Her father was an American Marine, and her mother was Chamorro. That's the indigenous group here that makes up nearly 40% of the population. Cristobal tells us that the military already owns one-third of the island, and enough is enough.
They occupy all the best spots on this island. They have military recreation facilities on our farmlands. The beaches that are assigned just for the use of military are the best beaches on this island.
Cristobal brought us here to show us the remains of an ancient Chamorro village.
So what are these supposed to be?
These are the foundations of our ancestors' homes.
These artifacts were removed from their original location years ago by the U.S. military.
These stones were relocated here from the ancient village of Fenna, and we cannot access that area. So these stones have been relocated to this capital town.
But today, John Jackson says that the Defense Department is taking measures to respect the local culture.
As part of our buildup, you know, we look at archaeological ruins where there are ancient Chamorro sites, and we're not going to disturb those. So we recognize that there's going to be impacts, but we want to minimize those impacts.
Some of those impacts were outlined in an environmental impact statement released in draft form this fall. It points out that the current military plans would expand onto more land in Guam, and that a planned rifle range would be built on an area that contains Chamorro archaeological sites. And there are other concerns about how the buildup might impact Guam. The island is only about 30 miles long, and the community is bracing for a massive influx of people. The same study revealed that at the peak of the buildup, the total increase in population on Guam would be estimated at more than 79,000 people. That's more than 40% of the current population.
We all know that whatever we do or say, it's not going to matter.
Judith Wonpat is the first female speaker of the Guam legislature and is one of the most important politicians on the island. She's frustrated by all this talk of the buildup because the people of Guam don't get a vote on this or anything else. They're U.S. citizens, but they can't vote for president. Remember, Guam is not a state, it's a territory, so it has little say over what the federal government does here. For example, the move of more than 8,000 Marines from Okinawa, Japan, to Guam.
The decision is made in Washington, and we're not brought to the table. We were told that that is a country-to-country level of discussion. That means Japan and the United States, not us. So all the decisions are being made without us.
Historically, the people of Guam have not had much control over their own island. The Americans first took the island when they won the Spanish-American War back in 1898. Then the Japanese seized it at the start of World War II, and it remained under Japan's control for 3 years.
Into the old American bastions that Japan had taken, Guam.
On July 21, 1944, U.S. Marines landed here to take back the island of Guam. More than 1,500 Marines died after 20 days of fighting the Japanese. Toward the end of World War II, Guam became a major base for the U.S. to attack Japan. In its heyday, about 200,000 American troops were stationed here. But today, only a few thousand remain. Still, the American presence is everywhere. The main street here is called Marine Corps Drive. There are banners supporting the troops. And in many places, Guam looks more like Florida than the Western Pacific. There's a TGI Fridays, a Harley-Davidson store, and this Kmart, it's one of the world's largest. The main industry is tourism, with mostly Japanese tourists coming to hit the beach and shop at the island's own version of Rodeo Drive. It's not until you get off the main drag that you see a more traditional side of Guam. On this hot and humid evening, we attend the annual festival of San Roque, the patron saint of the village of Barrigada. Everyone here seems to have an opinion about the buildup.
All I know is I got an American passport, which I know I can't even vote for your own president, which is sad, but the only thing I can say that Guam is just used only for a gas station, and that's all it is. That's the bottom line. It's just a gas station for the military.
But many see dollar signs in the buildup. Joe Blas is in the hotel business.
This beautiful island of Guam deserves and is ready to accept another economy. Tourism being the only economy here, I think the military infrastructure coming to Guam is great.
He's not the only one in the business community who thinks so. Jeff Pleadwell owns Jeff's Pirate Cove, a popular restaurant on Guam.
Is everything okay over here?
Pleadwell is originally from Massachusetts, but he moved here as a teenager while his father was working for the military.
So with this buildup, there's a lot of money that's going to come to this island.
Billions and billions.
I guess that's good news for you.
Yes, I think as far as a business goes, it's going to be very good news to go on into the future.
But he says he is worried about one thing, that all the money being spent inside the bases will stay there.
My main concern is when the military comes here, they just have like their own community and it doesn't spill over into the local community as far as the revenues that are created from this move.
So how will Guam absorb tens of thousands of people in just a few short years? We decided to look at some of the island's infrastructure, and what we found was not pretty. The primary landfill on the island has been ordered closed by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency because it's leaking and is near capacity. The major power plant on the island spews an excessive amount of sulfur dioxide. And one of the main wastewater treatment plants turns out to be a rusty, antiquated facility. It was there that we met with Simon Sanchez, who runs utilities on Guam.
We're standing here in your wastewater facility, and it looks pretty run down to me. So how will you support thousands of people coming to the island?
Money. I mean, we're guesstimating that to upgrade this facility, you might need $25 to $50 million.
And that's just one facility. A report on the proposed buildup had some sobering assessments regarding the island's infrastructure. It said that water and wastewater treatment systems are near capacity. It went on to state that solid waste facilities have reached the end of their useful life. It also cited that Guam's electrical system is not reliable and that its two major highways are in poor condition.
The project sounds huge. You need more infrastructure. You need more plants. Do you have a partner with the U.S. military?
Well, what Guam is going through now at all levels is actually sitting down with DOD, the military, and the federal government saying, look, you've changed our national policy to defend our country's interests differently. And that one of those changes that you've decided was to move a base in Okinawa to Guam. We don't have billions of dollars. The civilian community is not going to fork out billions of dollars to pay for the Marines coming here. The Marines got to pay for coming here. And any impact they create here, our position is you need to pay for that impact.
And the impacts from the buildup will affect almost every other aspect of Guam's infrastructure. The Department of Defense has said that it will pay for some of it. But who will foot the rest of the bill? We asked John Jackson about this.
Money's an issue. And that money doesn't come from the Department of Defense. Some of it can. Some of what we're doing with the buildup relates to those issues. But it's really a whole-of-government approach, whether it's Department of Transportation or Department of Commerce or Department of Agriculture or Education. All of the other federal agencies and departments really have a hand in solving the issues on the island.
Whether those federal agencies come up with the money remains to be seen. But the Defense Department is moving ahead. One of the biggest projects on Guam will be in and around the northern village of Dedido. About 45,000 people live here, and it's where the Marines and the construction workers will also soon live.
One-third of the population of this island live up in this northern area.
Melissa Savaris is the mayor of Dedido. She is supportive of the military presence on the island and has a son serving in Iraq. But as mayor, her biggest concern is the fact that thousands of foreign workers will soon be living in a $100 million housing development right in her backyard. Construction is set to begin this winter.
How big are we talking about? How big will this place be?
Well, according to the developer, it would be able to house 18,000 construction workers.
18,000
yes.
people?
Yes.
And this is right next to your village?
It's right along the village, yes.
Do you feel ready for it?
Not for this.
But Mayor Savaris says there is a silver lining for her community.
One of the advantages that we have with the buildup is that our people will have jobs, right? Yeah.
But she says one of the biggest challenges is to keep the indigenous Chamorro culture from being overwhelmed and forgotten.
We brought in 3 years ago a group of instructors that have been teaching our kids the language. We've actually worked with over 300 children in the communities.
And that's important because for decades the Chamorro culture was actually repressed. Children who spoke the native language in school were often penalized.
Our culture is, as much as we try and preserve it, it's slowly declining with every generation.
18-year-old Kristen Rivera says that growing up, she was surrounded by military culture and had very little exposure to Chamorro traditions.
You rarely find schools teaching, you know, Chamorro and stuff like that. And this island has always had military on it, you know? So I think us as a culture, we see other people come in their uniforms, successful, and we see that and we want that.
But when it comes to the issue of the military buildup, Kristen is worried about what may happen to the island she grew up on.
We're adding over 10,000 people onto this island that's already full. Until we're infrastructurally ready here on Guam. I don't think we'll be able to handle the Marines coming in.
Enlisted, center!
Yet for Kristen and many other young people, the Marines are a ticket to a life beyond Guam. She was accepted into college, but instead she's chosen to join the Marine Corps. And she's excited about becoming one of the few and the proud.
I will obey the orders. I will obey the orders of the President of the United States.
Today, Kristen and nine other young Guamanians are being sworn in. And every month, this same scene is repeated. Patriotism is strong on the island. In fact, recruitment rates here are actually higher than in the States. Kristen's father, Ralph, is proud of his oldest daughter.
So today's a big day.
That's an understatement. Today is a gigantic day in the Rivera household. It really is.
Like the Riveras, almost every family we met on the island has some tie to the armed forces. Ralph served in the Air Force and says military service runs deep in his family.
We come a long line of my mom's family. They all served in Vietnam. The brothers served in Vietnam. One Silver Star awardee, two Purple Hearts. My dad's side, 101st Airborne, my Uncle Tommy, his brother, died in Vietnam.
2 days later, Kristen Rivera is heading to boot camp. Her family is at the airport to send her off. Kristen says the next time she comes back, she'll be a Marine.
Hi, Chris.
But as popular as the U.S. military is on Guam, it turns out that they have become deeply unpopular elsewhere in the Pacific. In fact, it's the Japanese island of Okinawa that's become a flashpoint. It's been home to Marines since the end of World War II as a highly strategic base for the U.S. in the Pacific. Over the years, tensions have been mounting between service members and the local community. That's become a major reason for the relocation of Marines to Guam. A women's rights group in Okinawa documented hundreds of cases of sexual assaults by the U.S. military since the end of World War II, many of which were never prosecuted. Mayor Melissa Savaras tells us that when she went to Okinawa to find out firsthand about living with the Marines, she was shocked by what the women there told her.
They were upset. They wanted the Marines to leave because of the crime. That was the main thing, is they're raping our women.
And they told you that?
Well, you know, yes, they did say that. They're raping our women. Take the Marines away from us.
Much of the tension came from an incident that took place back in 1995 when two Marines and a sailor kidnapped and raped a 12-year-old girl. Okinawans took to the streets in massive demonstrations. The servicemen were eventually convicted in Japanese court and served years in prison.
I want to apologize to the family, the victim, and the Okinawan people.
The incident sparked talks between the United States and Japan to move the Marines out of Okinawa.
Is this what's driving the move of Marines to Guam?
No, not at all. The incidents always achieve a much higher profile in the news than do the day-to-day other events.
Wallace Gregson is the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Asian and Pacific Security Affairs and is a former commanding general of Marine Corps forces in the Pacific. At the Pentagon, that 1995 incident is a touchy subject.
It was a pretty brutal rape, though.
It certainly was.
And it did spark massive, massive protests.
And it did, as it should. An incident like that anywhere in the world, even here in Washington, D.C., would excite huge protests.
And that is that one of the reasons why the agreement was made so that Marines would move to Guam?
The agreement was made in order so that we could consolidate our presence in Okinawa and also to better position the alliance for future security demands.
So it had nothing to do with these sort of incidences?
No, I wouldn't say nothing. But you'd have to ask the Japanese on that. But the basic reason for the agreement was strategic and operational.
But for many Okinawans, the agreement doesn't go far enough. Just last month, as President Obama prepared to make his first visit to Japan, Okinawans again protested, calling for even more of the 18,000 U.S. military personnel to leave their island.
They considered them to be a problem in their community with the crimes, in particular against women and young girls. So, well, you know, what's the best thing to do? Let's now take him, t- take the problem from one place and put him in another place, hoping then that, you know, things will be much better.
Judith Wonpat, the Speaker of the Guam Legislature, spoke to people in Okinawa during a visit there. Upon her return, she started a group to address women's issues. And this past September, a delegation from Okinawa came to Guam as part of an international women's conference. Among the topics, the treatment of women by the U.S. military. The military continues to feel the heat on this issue. When the Secretary of the Navy was recently in Guam, he was questioned by the local media.
Can you also address some of the increasing concerns for the potential of an increase in violent sexual assault, such as rape, with the influx of these Marines?
Today's Marines are the most disciplined, most professional, best educated, highest trained Marines we've ever had. If there is any sort of crime, but particularly sexual crime, we're going to act very quickly, we're going to act very fairly, but we're going to act in a way that shows we just don't put up with this.
What the Secretary didn't say is that by moving the Marines to Guam, the Pentagon won't have to deal with a foreign government upset over U.S. military presence.
We're asking that we be party to those kinds of decisions.
Hope Cristobal, the history professor, is unhappy about the coming military buildup, but believes the problem runs deeper than that. Guam has been a colony for over a century, she says, and it's time for that to end. This fall, she and a small delegation from Guam came to speak before the United Nations. She flew thousands of miles just for 7 minutes to bring her case to the world community.
Guam's militarization is happening because the administering power has unfettered political control over its colonial territory. We can think of no condition under which this United Nations might conceive a justifiable excuse for the subjugation of a people's right to self-determination.
She says the time has come for the people of Guam to have a voice in the future of their island. In the meantime, construction to bring the Marines to Guam is set to begin next year.
It's going to be forever changed. And I'm not fighting change so much. I'm fighting for our livelihoods. I'm fighting for our lives.